Welcome to Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. There's more at the website, allbook-books.com, from whence the Substack page, Musings from Between the Lines. This week's episode inspired in part by none other than Bob Dylan lyrics. Once in a while, I gotta listen to the old tunes. And one of on his greatest hits double album, She Belongs to Me, one line jumped out. She wears an Egyptian ring that sparkles before she speaks. Actually, the whole stanza is, she wears an Egyptian ring that sparkles before she speaks. She wears an Egyptian ring that sparkles before she speaks. She's a hypnotist collector. You are a walking antique. But the reason I like that first line is that it's an excellent example of the one-liner image and how much you can evoke as a writer or a lyricist from just one line. He paints a huge picture and just the observational skill. She wears an Egyptian ring that sparkles before she speaks. So he gives you the visual, and then he gives you the anticipation of her speaking, not to mention the Egyptian ring. So, wonderful line, got me to talk about that as a writing tip, writing skill, writing guide to, train your observational skills and then be able to put those into words. Obviously, that's one of the big tricks of good writing. Now, that's the beauty part of the show, and the beast of the Beauty and the Beast is the name of this episode. That's the beauty part, and the beast is having read about Gaza, the ongoing, pray they stop soon, genocidal attacks on Gaza. Little children having heart attacks, which is just heart-wrenching to learn, which just speaks to the level of, I guess, that just tells of the stress, the absolute freaking stress of a war zone, even though it's more than a war zone, but just the horrors being perpetrated. And that little bit just almost leaves one speechless to convey the beast, the direct side effect of the beast. But to actually talk about it is to, it's an example of, and recently I posted some photos of before and after of Gaza and before and after the COP30 where Brazil destroyed a section of the rainforest, cutting down trees to build a road for COP30, which is laughably sad. But just I noticed that sometimes people's intense reaction to simple things like a visual or, one line or about something going on is far more impactful and emotional than umpteen articles. So that's not to say that articles don't do something, but it got me thinking about other ways to get through to people, which is nothing new, but it just got me as a writer to look at sometimes going the more simple and direct route. I think what happens with writing is that sometimes people become normalized and they read stuff and then it's sort of like it doesn't have the same impact as a photo or a video or even just a obvious heart-wrenching news bit. But part of this, again, I trace to an excellent, one of my favorite books, Marshall McLuhan, The Gutenberg Galaxy, for opening my eyes more to the power and the disempowerment of the letters, alphabet, and the words. So he talks about in there how the letters basically with the alphabet and the printed word, it made people to be more visual And, you know, it's more of like a cerebral, even though you get emotionally stirred reading, but it's more of a cerebral exercise to read. It's a visual. So it's actually a form of sensory deprivation. And Gutenberg and McLuhan writes, it has been assumed till now that so long as everybody is hypnotized by the same isolated sense or spell, that the resulting homogeneity of mental states will suffice for human association. That print, increasingly hypnotized the Western world, is nowadays the theme of all historians of art and science alike, because we no longer live under the spell of the isolated visual sense. We have not yet begun to ask under what new spell we exist. In place of spell, it may be more acceptable to say assumptions or parameters or frame of reference. No matter what the metaphor, is it not absurd for men to live involuntarily altered in their inmost lives by some mere technological extension of our inner senses? The shift in our sense ratios brought about by exteriorizations of our senses is not a situation before which we need be helpless. Computers can now be programmed for every possible variety of sense ratio. We can then read off exactly what would be the resulting cultural assumptions in the arts and sciences of such a new specific ratio as was produced by TV, for example. Above that, he says, and the striking fiat, the isolation of the visual, is the great achievement of Gutenberg. And he's quoting somebody here, Danzig, D-A-N-T-Z-I-G. Thus, the alleged properties of the straight line are of the geometer's making. He deliberately disregards thickness and breadth, deliberately assumes that the thing common to two such lines, their point of intersection, is deprived of all dimension. But the assumptions themselves are arbitrary, a convenient thing at best. End quote. It is easy for Danzig to see how fictional classical geometry was. It got huge nourishment from printing after being engendered by the alphabet, and the non-Euclidean geometrics familiar to our time also depend on electric technology for their nutriment and plausibility. And this is no more seen by mathematics now than the relations to alphabet and print were seen by mathematicians in the past. It has been assumed till now that so long as everybody is hypnotized by the same isolated sense or spell, the resulting homogeneity of mental states will suffice for human association. So this is, in fact, I say in fact in quotes, that this isolated sense of what he talks about as the reading and the literature, the letters and the alphabet, but if you fast forward that to the gadget and the screen, hypnotized by the same isolated sense or spell, that the resulting homogeneity of mental states will suffice for human association. Is that not what's going on, where people read, you know, for the most part, they read the same social media feeds, and there's a homogeneity of opinions and views, and then anybody who goes against that grain is then either conspiracy theorist or banned or tin hat, or an outlaw or whatever label. So yeah, this is 1962 by Marshall McLuhan. So perhaps a good daily discipline is to while one is reading, to also check the emotional ratios and to all the sensory ratios that are aside just from the visual and the intellectual. And the visual and intellectual of the written word, whether on page or screen. So, following the Dylan quote, we must continue to look for the sparkles amidst the dark times. And another line that comes to mind from "A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall," I'll know my song well before I start singing. Look for the sparkles and think about what's getting said before singing. And one more thing to add on this is one of my Lakota friends, Teokasin Ghost Horse, he has mentioned in his talks about the Lakota language I think he said like 30% cannot be translated into English, which is just, that causes pause for reflection. 30%. So the Lakota language, whatever it is that they're able to convey, that English there's nothing in English to convey that, which my sense of that is that, like, I may experience or feel something, but I don't have the words for it that perhaps the Lakota language has the words for that, or they have the consciousness to put that into words, but the English doesn't. So I say that in the context of, again, tying into the printed letters and words as not fully conveying the fullest of experience, and yet, as a society, overall, we have gotten hypnotized by the very printed word, and by that letter, the letter of the law, the book, the words of God. The graduation from school is how many books you can read, basically. So the whole basic society, that's what I go into depth in my book, Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest, Inside Looking Out, is how this printed word, as much as I love it and look to it for information and guidance, that when it comes to the bigger consciousness and the empathy and the relating with all the different species and beings around this Mother Earth, that the printed letters, the alphabet in our English, is something that I think we need to get past, so to speak, or get beyond it, or have it be a tool in the toolbox, but it's, think outside the toolbox. Also, to add that the reference in the Substack page to the Palestinian children, and the specific reference to a 7-year-old, Rayan Suleiman, a 7-year-old who the article says died of a heart attack after being chased by Israeli soldiers. This is one of the saddest articles I have ever read. His school friends wrote elegies for him, which included, "My friend Ryan, you were martyred, and the joy in our school died, and the smiles left our faces. The boys were wanted for questioning over stone throwing, but the chase went on for about 3 kilometers, ending with a heart attack for the frightened child, after soldiers came to his home." Now, how fucking psychotic is that? Those are not Jewish people. Those are Israeli insane occupied forces, defense, whatever they're called. That's just an insane level. So what I wrote about recently, in the not as emotional sense, but the word genocide, coming from the gene, to be born, the genes, deeming a people unworthy or subhuman. It's a form of eugenics, and it's genocide. And that's the intellectual explanation. But this is the emotional explanation. That the behavior that follows that kind of psychosis is chasing a 7-year-old boy as if he posed a threat. As if he posed a threat. So thanks for listening, and be well, and shalom, which means peace, wholeness, soundness, completeness, well-being, safety, prosperity, happiness, friendliness, welfare, health, hello, and goodbye. Thanks for listening.